Okay, are you aware that Grant County received the highest child poverty rates in the state?
Yes.
So are you surprised by this? Why? Why not?
I am not surprised because, I have been in Grant County since 1989 as a college student first, and then now obviously I live here. And it's my mission field. I mean, I chose to come here because I liked working with children who were in a poverty situation. So, not surprised at all. And I, the Allen School is the last I heard we were on 97% free or reduced lunch, which means those students are living at or below poverty rate. So I deal with it every day.
So, is it apparent in the classroom or the school entirely that these rates are high? Like, yeah. What do you see on a daily basis?
I see kids that are hungry. Just for example, we serve breakfast, and it's either free or reduced for 97% of our population. If kids are tardy, breakfast is over. And they haven't been fed, so they're hungry. So I try to have food in here. On two-hour delay days, they don't get breakfast again, and they're hungry. So, again, it's like we try to have food. Sometimes our social worker will try to have extra food for them. So right there is hunger is an issue. They come in hungry in the morning. So that's one big issue. Clothing, just like, you know, I have a little boy and his clothes are way too small. Sometimes it's shoes that are too small. Sometimes it's like they'll wear the same thing every day for a week or longer, and that's when we'll ask our social worker for donated clothes. In the winter, we go through and get, I went through all my kids and said, okay, who has coats, who has hats, who has gloves, and made sure all my kids had coats, hats, gloves. If they didn't have it from home, they had it from here. There's a couple different, I think a Methodist church does like a shoe drive, and so they measure all of our kids, some social work interns come in and measure all of our kids' shoes, and then they send them over there to get shoes. So that, I think there's one, that one, and I think there's another shoe drive, but for sure there's a Methodist church, and I can't remember which one. So the shoes. And then we just notice it with hygiene. I have kids that are dirty on a consistent basis. I mean, today during my, one of my reading groups, I had to help a kid clean his ears, because they were just filthy, and I've been looking at them, at dirty ears for, it's been like several weeks, and I'm like, here, buddy, let's just get a Kleenex, and let's just clean out your ears real quick. Or kids that come in dirty, you know, they need to wash their hands when they come in the morning, or their clothes are filthy. The coats, like, my boys hang their coats right when you come in, or the girls' coats closet. If you walk by those on days, the odor is very strong. I always keep, I've got it turned off now, but I just turned it off like an hour ago. I keep a candle, like a candle warmer or a scented something, because the room gets, it just smells bad. I mean, some of it's just cigarettes, but some of it's just bad hygiene. Kids who haven't brushed their teeth. I have issues with chronic lice. I don't have any that I'm aware of right now, but there are issues with bed bugs and sometimes cockroaches. So, I mean, those are all things that come with poverty. And then I have parent involvement can be real tricky. Sometimes just getting parents to sign things. And sometimes it's the kids not showing them, so it's not always the parents. But a lot of times parent involvement can be lax. Now, we've done a couple things this year, and if we provide, like, a meal, we tend to have more parent involvement. If we provide food for them and their family, they'll bring their whole family to the event. So we've had pretty good turnout this year, but if we provide food, it helps with turnout. But like I have a little guy and his backpack has been broken and he just keeps restapling it. Mm-hmm. You know, if he was in a poverty situation, his parents would just go buy him a new backpack.
Right.
So, and then our students come in to school several years behind in reading. Yeah. And so I'm trying to get them caught up so they can pass ISTEP and iRead state tests. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge job. But yeah, I see it every day. Every day, all day.
So how has the poverty rates affected your ability to teach, like, effectively for these kids?
You know, for me, it's just always been this way. I used to teach at Lincoln Elementary before it closed. And so this is my normal because it's my mission field, and I chose to work. I didn't choose to work in a wealthy area. I chose to work in an area of poverty. So nothing for me has really changed as far as, I'm changing. I'm constantly changing as a teacher. I just have more children that are living in poverty than where, you know, at Lincoln I may have had a handful. There's just more kids in my class that are hungry, or more kids in my class that need clothing, or more kids in my class that aren't going to have a good Christmas, that kind of a thing.
Do you feel like you have to focus more on providing, like, basic needs for these kids rather than the education levels that they're supposed to be getting right now?
I would say I do have to focus on it because obviously their basic needs have to be met. But it's not my primary focus because I do have support. Like our social worker, Lori Brain, and then we have a counselor, Deb Stiles. We have a lot of support from the two of them. So like if a kid doesn't have a clean shirt, I can send him down and say, hey, can you give so-and-so a clean shirt? And then we have some organizations that have stepped in and donated clothes and things. So I feel like I get more help. But I also, as a teacher, I know, like, I have kids that sometimes have to come in and just, I have a girl that came in and just had to sleep for 15 minutes because she just was exhausted because she was up all night. And so I guess I'm kind of, it's normal for me, but I teach differently than teachers would in different areas. That makes sense?
Yeah.
I just keep it in the back of my head. Like, I try to keep granola bars in my desk drawer, mm-hmm. so it's like, I didn't have breakfast. Okay, here you go. Or I keep peppermints here, so I'm hungry, my stomach hurts. And I would probably do that if I taught in a different kind of environment, too, mm-hmm. but I just am more aware of what's around me,
right.
I guess. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it has changed my teaching, per se, but I think I've developed a certain style because that's the environment that I work in. Like, I do lots of small groups with my kids so they get my attention, but also so I can meet all the different levels that they're at. But if I taught in a different area, I would still do the same thing. But the other thing that I have to do is I have to teach a lot of vocabulary because they don't know what things are, where as a child I traveled. They're lucky if they go to Indianapolis or Fort Wayne. So, or if they get out of Grant County, like one time on ISTEP, we had a question about a plow, and you'd think living here in Indiana, they'd know what plows mm-hmm. are. They didn't know what a plow was because they hadn't been out of Marion. So there's things like that vocabulary that I really have to work on with them. That's one reason why I do all these, they're called anchor charts, where I post everything so they can get a visual, so they can look at that and look at that and look at that and kind of cement it in their head. So there's strategies that I've developed, but I would use them no matter who I was working with. So, yes, they help my kids in poverty, but I think they would help anybody be a better learner. That makes sense?
Yeah. Are there other, like, things that you have to do living in the area and teaching the area that you do that other teachers in other counties with better poverty rates don't have to do, you think?
Definitely. I think I have more kids at a lower level, so I have to do more, we call it differentiated instruction, the grouping. I probably have to do a lot more. We have a larger level of kids that are below grade level. I mean, it's not like I can just open the third grade textbook and mm-hmm. teach from it. I have to come up with my own, really my own curriculum. I mean, I use parts of it, but I have to come up with a lot of my own things. Number one, I have to make things more hands-on for the kids, but I have to meet them at their level. And I can't just pull out a third grade book and expect that they're going to be ready for it. I have to back way up. Where, you know, third grade, I'm supposed to be doing multiplication. My kids some of my kids didn't know how to add and subtract yet. So, or weren't fluent in addition and subtraction. So I had to back up and do a lot of background and things that they should already know, they don't know yet. And our kids, you know, I have had kids that are at like beginning reading level, like all the way from kindergarten level all the way up to like fifth, sixth grade level. So the range is huge. And then there's things like, you know, I had a little girl that came in every morning and she kept a hairbrush here. She would go down to the bathroom and she would brush her hair. Mm-hmm. And then I would help her put it up in a ponytail, because her hair was always a disaster in the morning and no one helped her brush her hair because her parents both worked early in the morning and her brother watched her in the morning. So there's things like that that, or like me helping look for lice in a kid's head. Mm-hmm. Those are things that definitely.
So in your opinion, what sort of things need to happen or take place to help with this problem?
Well, obviously jobs. Mm-hmm. Jobs is huge. But I think we have a huge dependency on the welfare system. And there is a sense of entitlement in Marion. And I live in... close to downtown. So there is poverty around me. And there is a sense of entitlement. There's a lack of morals in our community. Any religion, whatever you want to call it, there's just a lack of morals in Marion. And a lack of priority. I have parents that would rather sleep in than get their students here on time. And that shouldn't matter if you are struggling to make a living, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think one thing, jobs, but I think churches to step up in the community and, to help. And I think that some people have lived in Marion their whole life and are not aware of the extreme poverty. And just, like, volunteers. Like, we are having, one day a week, we're having Jill Mazzellan. She works at College Wesleyan, but she has a therapy dog that's coming in, and she and her therapy dog are listening to kids read. I mean, that's huge. Mm-hmm. Like, they're getting extra attention.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, community, it doesn't have to be churches, but just community awareness and just support for teachers and students. And we do have, I don't want to slam the community, because we have that, like, Hanfield supports us. We have support from Indiana Wesleyan. We get support from Via Credit Union. So we do have community support. We've gotten, like, donations from Walmart for our school. Dollar General has donated, so I think things like that have helped. I think also for the Department of Education to realize what we're up against, because their expectation is for up to be, you know, for these kids to take a third grade state test when they're hungry, they're dirty, and they're struggling, you know, to read at a first and second grade level, and then they're supposed to pass this third grade test with higher level thinking, and you know, and it's like, really? Mm-hmm. I'm just happy that Johnny is able to finally focus for the first time, yeah. you know, or that so-and-so has not been tardy for 3 days in a row. Mm-hmm. So there's things like that that, but yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. That's all I have. Is there anything else you want to add? Or?
No. I'm interested to see. You'll have to email me when the
article comes out. Yeah, I definitely will.
I want to read it.
I will, for sure.